Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street. Do you need a conference room for your next meeting? Learn more by visiting 100bogart.com.
This week, Meet and Three is taking you to market and all over the world, from Newfoundland to Tunisia.
Well, a lot of us think of, you know, the British Empire trading things like spices and sugar and silk. But you write that it actually began with salt cod from Newfoundland.
There was a port closure in Tunisia, which was horrible. I mean, it was months, boats just sitting on the water waiting to go, and they couldn't go anywhere.
And we'll learn about how markets have changed, whether because of their customers or the climate.
A few years ago, something around 10 years, it was totally different.
It almost manifests itself to almost smelling like an old fire pit. When you, when you put it out, it has that sort of charcoal-y smell to it. It's not good for wine.
Join us this week on Meet and Three for our global market tour. And don't forget to subscribe to Meet and Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. This is, what day is today? It is Thursday, August 15th.
No, the summer days just seem to blur into each other.
They just mold into one.
We miss that voice.
Especially if you've been spending a lot of time at legal cannabis shops in Canada.
This summer has been the best 24 hours of my life.
It has gone by very quickly. Speaking of 24 hours, this is the Main Course OG. We are back in studio with, I'd say, the OG crew.
Originals.
Of... The Main Course OG. Mr. Mike Edison, welcome back.
Hello, Mike.
It's very 2009 in here. I feel 2009.
I wasn't here in 2009.
How old were you?
Just a star in the sky.
I was graduating college.
I want to know how you could compare Mellow Mike to Magic Mike. Are they like in the same breath?
Would you think it's better to be Marvelous or Magnificent? Like Marvelous Marvin Hager or the Magnificent
Love
Marvelous. Morocco?
I like
or the Magnificent Morocco.
Magnificent is pretty cool. There's something like elusive and like magical about Magnificent. Yeah. Marvelous is like stunning.
Shiny.
Yeah, totally. Like,
I'm gonna take Magnificent over Magic, Mellow, or Marvelous.
Oh, there you go. You've got yourself a new name.
But it's Mike. It's all Mike all the time.
By the way, Magic Johnson just Instagrammed with his like 5 million followers his top 60 movies of all time. Which I was like, what the hell?
Did you notice that they're in alphabetical order? Oh. I'm like, is this how his brain works? Like movies are already
why
alphabetized.
60?
Bad Boys was number 3.
Yeah.
Godfather was number 1.
Yeah, I guess Godfather was but if you look at it, besides Godfather, the rest of them are in alphabetical order.
I was like,
it was almost
Magic.
Like his autocorrect did the
could
the
you
list.
Do a top 60?
He owns movie theaters. No. He owns movie theaters, so maybe that's not so bad.
He also did his top 30 vacation spots, and he did his top 30 TV shows, and I feel like there was one other. I don't want to.
I love
he
30
didn't, he
vacation
didn't rank his
spots.
Favorite restaurants.
No, I don't think so.
We should ask him to rate his top 10 radio podcasts.
I love it.
We
that's
would be number
so,
one.
My top 500 vacation spots. Now, I've been to 70,000, but I've picked the top 50.
Yeah, so I couldn't even give you 30 of my favorite vacation spots. I haven't vacationed in 30 places.
I'm like, is going to see Joanne a vacation? Because then I say Connecticut.
What, in Dumbo?
Yeah,
New
in
Jersey.
Dumbo, exactly.
Yeah, in Dumbo.
Mike, speaking of vacation, you just told me you got back last night from rural Canada.
I did, and this very second I got to LaGuardia Airport Terminal B, and the whole thing was ruined.
It just erases every bit of...
That's what you got to watch out for. It's like, you know, I was out in the backwoods of Ontario cottage country.
At a guru's house, right?
No phones, no...
Well, so that's what we want to talk about. You're telling me no commerce.
Is LaGuardia Terminal B the old one that still, like, when it rains, it just rains through the roof?
It's just
it's the one that is half new right now. It's half shiny and beautiful, and it's half old and
you have to drive the bus to the plane.
It looks like the Erector set you had when you were a kid, except that, like, you know, somebody came in and stomped on it.
Gross.
Guys, come on. They're an airport building in an airport. That's amazing. Okay,
that I am very impressed by. I think that's got to be one of the hardest projects to be a part of, to keep an active airport. Same thing with like running a hospital while having it under construction.
This one lady who's friends with Sananda, actually, I swear to God, was an airport designer. And I was like, do you get a ton of business as an airport designer? Like, how many airports are actually being built? You must, like, if you don't get a job, you're like, oh, it's gonna be 5 years before another airport's built. But anyway, those guys at LaGuardia are the top of their field. They're doing it in each other.
Well, you think city planners too would be obsolete, but I look around New York City, I mean, for Christ's sakes, the city's 300 years old. You think it'd be finished by now?
Well, I have a friend that's I have a friend that's working on the construction site there, and they really are hustling
at LaGuardia.
They have a date by which they're required contractually to be finished.
2095.
No, it's quite soon. And for every day they go past that,
they lose funding.
They lose funding. It's like hundreds of thousands of dollars per day.
I actually much prefer a smaller port like LaGuardia than, I mean, I'll go to like Richmond and it's like a 40-minute walk to my, you know, get the plane or to get
Patrick
my baggage.
Patrick gets very upset at JFK when you're in Terminal 4 and there's too large of a gap between each of the gates. And he's like, why are they wasting...
I want to take a flight.
See, here's what happened here. This is such a New York group that we overlooked the fact that Mike was just somewhere with a guru.
And we went straight into how shitty the airport is.
We just jumped a conversation of how shitty the airport is.
I blame Mike. He said his vacation was ruined as soon as he landed. But wait, going back to this, it's kind of like throwing a potato
pancake into the oil.
You said the house has solar panels. It's on a private island. Very exclusive.
You went to Canada twice.
It's not exclusive in the sense that it's an exclusive resort or some of the kind of thing that Miley Cyrus might go to. But it's an old family home in a place that's completely undeveloped. So in terms of exclusive, it's really
and Patrick was
remote.
Upset to hear
and,
that.
And there's no development going on.
Patrick was upset. You can't buy this. Okay, I find the word cottage interesting. So in Canada and also in the Midwest in general, around the lakes, they call cottages
cottage country.
They're actually mansions. It's just this like friendly little way of being like, oh, we're going to our summer cottage for the weekend.
But it's a mansion.
That's true. And everything is on a scale. I mean, there are McMansions or McCottages or mega cottages and monster cottages. That's like a lot of nouveau riche.
Let's talk about the genre monster cottage because that sounds interesting.
But there are also like some really old cottages that are 100 years old. They're just really, I think, what the Kennedys would have called a compound.
That's true.
On this island, there's just the main house is pretty small. Where we were, it's two bedrooms and it's very pretty. The house is over 100 years old, and a boathouse and a dock, and there are little casitas, cabins in the woods that are just one bedroom each. They're kind of like if you could imagine the Unabomber.
Is there running water?
In the main house, there is. And there's an outhouse outside.
And what does the region pride itself on? No cell phone service.
No.
I'm like, is that a luxury?
You're projecting your own fears, Patrick.
All these nice boutique regions in the world are like fantastic.
Brandon, do
you
like
you
being
can't
disconnected?
Use a phone. I'm like, that's a terrible punishment.
Or do you feel that you just can't be at this point?
No, I like I'm fine being disconnected.
But I mean, you'd like the choice. Like Southern Oregon's like, you can't get cell phone service
here. Well, Patrick,
I'm like, that's dumb.
Patrick, you have the choice. You don't have to go there.
And I don't think anyone's advertising that, Patrick.
But if you go there
what's the choice?
Here.
Like, you go there and you're like, hey, guys, can we just turn off? Like,
yeah,
Patrick's here.
Off,
let's
I
turn
did.
Back on.
No, you it's can like, turn
so
off.
I'm okay with being disconnected if I get to announce first to people that I'm going to be disconnected. I don't quite like when I am suddenly just unable to reach people. But if I can say I'm going to be out of pocket or I'm not going to be able to be reached, then I'm okay with it.
You can put that little response on your email. Contact Patrick.
This way, I don't know. People expect immediate responses. People get nervous.
It's true. What happened? So wait, the time you were in Canada.
I just try to lower everybody's expectations of like my productivity. I'm like,
yeah, you never like my photos on Instagram. That's offensive.
People like Patrick texts me and I'm just like, ugh,
no, you respond right away to me. You're very nice. And to those people from last week's show with the oyster, you were very responsive to. No, you are responsive to certain
you're
things.
You're ridiculous.
Look, Mike, talk about guru. We want to hear about the guru. You went to a retreat.
Well, that was a couple weeks ago. I've been spending a lot of time in Canada lately, actually.
Good for you.
Yeah,
are you becoming Canadian, though?
Well, am I nicer and funnier? Do I seem...
You seem relaxed.
You have fewer guns.
You're a little less cynical.
Is that the Canadian thing, being less cynical?
I don't know. Maybe just vacation.
The most Canadian thing you could do is just to tell people who else is Canadian. Oh, yeah, Martin Short, he's Canadian.
Paul Schaefer.
You know who else?
Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, you see that. Oh, and you know who else?
You know, the Jews do that. For you. I was going to say.
The Jews do that, though.
Like I was going to say, the Jews do it.
You found a home in a place where you can just be a Yenta, essentially.
Yeah, he's Jewish. Oh, you know who else?
Yeah.
Didn't you tell everybody, like, who grew up in your town in New Jersey? Weren't you rattling those off, too?
No.
So Mike says this guru says you're in line all the
New Jersey pride, sure.
You're in line all the time, so live with it. Make the most of it. And I agree with that. If I'm in line at the deli, you should talk with people and be funny, and they're, you know, looking at your phone. But don't be mad that you have a line, although I did walk out of the bagel shop today. But you mentioned driving, and that is offensive. When they're bad drivers, I don't need to be in line. They're just bad drivers. And there I feel
Wait,
you should honk your horn.
Wait, was this sage guru advice? Where did this come from?
Well, the guru was speaking of... the concept that you do a lot of waiting in your life. There's no his main message is non-stressful living, and trying to not find stress in places that don't, you know.
Does he interrupt?
Easily avoidable. Otherwise, we'd go fucking nuts.
Does that guy interrupt?
I don't know. He's never done a radio show with you, Patrick.
I was going to say, because if he interrupts, he should be patient.
Where are you on the sampler, Brandon?
Yeah, really. Hit a button.
Wait, so speaking
it's
of...
It's so far away, guys. It's so far away. It seems tiring to even get there.
Hit the enlightenment button.
So I have a question. So I was going to ask this actually in the show, waiting in line for something famous. Yes or no?
For something famous? What?
I'm thinking Luke Holly, I'm thinking the Cronut.
Elton John tickets.
Is it worth it? Do you have the patience?
No.
Is it? Well,
I'll
we know,
pay extra.
Yeah, we know you don't. I knew that answer.
I would pay extra for someone whose job it is to do stuff like that.
So you would Postmates, you'd be like, I'd like you to wait 6 hours on a line.
No. I would pay an Uber driver.
That's the same thing.
To just drive the car up a little inch each time someone goes in front of him and then eventually buy the ticket.
All right. So, but for real, waiting in line. No?
No, I'm not. I hate him. But also, I agree with this. Like, if you are stuck in a line, I have to go do the bank often. It's like, you just make the best of it.
Yeah,
there's nothing else you can do. Just sitting there being pissed off doesn't do any good.
No.
So if you're stuck in a line, just try to enjoy yourself.
I think you can make eye contact with the teller and make it look like it's urgent. They rush a little bit. If you look too relaxed, maybe they relax.
Yeah, but then you make a worse service by the time you get up there. Maybe there's something to be
mean.
Said
I'm
for.
Just like,
first of all, you don't know. Closer. You have no self perception of what you're being. Almost always, you're being something that you don't think you're being.
Oh, no.
Most of the time, just a dick.
Brandon, your most recent Instagram post: a mannequin. What is this?
Creepy, right?
Yeah. What is it?
My new best friend.
Where did you find her?
Very funny that you believe that to be a she.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
that's funny.
What's the indicator?
Oh, I guess it's a young boy.
You can only see the head.
Are you sure?
Unclear. Where did you find this?
In an attic in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a very creepy place. There was multiple moving mannequins. That happened to be just the best picture because at the same time I was taking the picture, somebody else was, and I caught their flash.
For those of you who follow Brandon, you know there was no caption, no anything, no description
of where this
was taken.
If any of you know Brandon, you know that I'm dyslexic and can barely spell my own name. So captions are pretty much out of the question. Even with spell check, it looks ridiculous. I pretty much have to have Mike Edison write copy for my whole life.
You're a dedicated writer in residence.
Send an email to that person saying thanks. Mike's like 10-4 after lunch.
Thumbs up, buddy.
Yeah.
So
this has become a great pet peeve for me, though. People not responding to emails in a timely fashion.
What do you consider timely?
If it's urgent, like within a couple of hours, you know, I understand, you know, but generally speaking, 24 hours.
Yeah, I think
after that, I'm being ghosted.
I would agree with that.
Email, no. Text, yes. Everyone sees but the text.
Well, there's a hierarchy of information that people, you know, has slipped a little bit. I mean, texts are like, hey, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. Or, you know, do you want to go to the movies tonight? Or,
I have to be honest with you. I'm not connected to my phone probably nearly as much as you guys are. Like, my phone will disappear for many hours of the day, whether it be just, like, left somewhere or in my children's hands somewhere. Like, there's periods of hours, especially like on a Sunday, that I may not see my phone for 4 hours. And I'm not like one to just constantly be looking to see what's happening.
So your email's even less.
I make a point on the weekends to like leave my phone in one room and probably walk away from it for quite some time.
But
and
you have one of those baby monitors that you can hear it if it dings?
No.
Well, I'm not always.
Often I leave it on vibrate accidentally.
I keep it silent, but I also know that at some point I have to check email because I'm involved in things that need to be tracked and ongoing business. I mean, you run a business. I mean, you can't turn your email off all day. You got to come back around to it and check it eventually.
Agreed.
It doesn't need to be tethered to your head. I mean, you know.
I also kind of have the opposite effect. I think sometimes when somebody just like responds to me right away, in my mind I'm like, what is this person doing? Just sitting around waiting to do something on their phone or their computer?
Emily and I are
in
the meat business. We like to end things. Someone's like, I want to add this. You're like, it's been added. It's been taken care of. Because so many stupid little things can build that we would have 3 hours of 200 little things versus just taking care of it.
I have a few chefs specifically. If I don't answer their text immediately, I'll never get the secondary response from them, and often
they're thinking about it.
They're often personalities that require a follow-up question, and if I don't get it right then, I'll never get it.
Oh, although we're working on that. Emily has a lot of follow-up questions because you're a perfectionist. I'm just like, make it easier on them, ship it, and then maybe 5% of the time it's wrong, but the other 95, I've only just been like, got it.
That sounds horribly inefficient.
No,
and
I
then
know.
People are sending shit back
no,
to you.
No, they don't like, send
I,
it
no,
back.
Response is really poor. Just acknowledge. I'm putting out a fire right now. Working on, a new book that I'm working on. I'm dealing with people. If I don't hear back from them, I'm not assured. Did you get the file? You know, they're like they get it and they're like off to the races and it might be all cool.
But unless someone
says to me, "Hey, got it, all good," that's all I need to hear. Otherwise, it creates undue anxiety.
I understand that.
To the most mundane things. I mean, I just kind of like got into kind of like an email. I don't think you call it a flame war exactly, but I was like, "Hey, you know, I sent you some receipts last week. Have they been processed?" And a week later, she says, "Oh, they weren't attached to your email." I'm like, "Well, you should have told me that like the second you got it."
I think there is some etiquette here.
I know it's very mundane. It's just, you know, a couple bucks for some expenses, but you could have easily said that they weren't because I've crossed it off my list and now I got to go back.
But like when Patrick writes you an email
and my check
that's
is
almost
be 4 weeks late.
Nonsensical, like it's like
well, that's,
it's like very there's like actually no point to the email. You're kind of just like he's like, "I'd like to introduce you to Bob. Bob does this. He'd also like to come to dinner sometime in the next year. Hey, talk to Bob." And I'm just like, "What the fuck? Who the fuck? No last name. If Adam had responded right away and said,
"Hey, yes, thank you, Patrick," that he didn't respond. So
Patrick
like,
is like
no,
Colonel
no.
Kurtz, you know, and
why would
now?
I respond to any of this?
I try to put all my email texts in the title.
It would be like if you were in line for the bathroom with Patrick and he introduced you to the person who just came out of the john before him. It's like, why? I don't, like, maybe you made friends with him, but I don't feel
that
the
guy
need
wanted a
to
job.
Also
well, how many
shake
times
the
have
hand
I done
of the
that?
Man who just pissed.
In 20 years, how many times have I done that?
He sends you pictures and doesn't really clarify what the picture is of.
Well, you know he does that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait a second. That sounds like bad. That's
so wait, speaking of you know, nagging on Patrick a little bit, this morning Patrick asked me, what would I do if he just gifted me a dog?
No, an animal.
Okay,
have you
an
ever
animal.
Been gifted an animal by anyone?
Do you want anyone to gift you an animal? Isn't
I would
that
probably
burdensome?
Kill it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe just not purposefully, but probably accidentally at some point.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's a bit of a burden, a bit of a little presumption.
It raises the question of euthanasia. When I say euthanasia, I mean killing Patrick.
Euthanasia?
Oh, yes.
Sounds like a porn site.
I mean, I don't know.
That was a good one.
I think you got it. That was
pretty much the right sound.
Bravo.
This episode was brought to you by 100 Bogart, a new building in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with meeting and event spaces available for on-demand booking. Looking for the next perfect outdoor location for your next gathering? Host your next event at 100 Bogart's impressive rooftop, just steps away from the Morgan L Stop. It's one of the largest and tallest roof spaces in Bushwick, boasting 360-degree views of Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens. 100 Bogart's rooftop is available for your next networking event, fundraiser, special performance, or photo shoot. There's approximately 5,000 square feet, ample space for up to 100 guests. For more information on hosting an event at 100 Bogart's rooftop, email info@100bogart.com or call 718-362-3539.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Lisa Held, and I'm the host of The Farm Report here on HRN. The Farm Report is a show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. Expect from-the-field insights as guests explore how producing fresh, delicious food relates to environmental and community sustainability, justice, and better health. You can find The Farm Report wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
So, wait, did Pasties not open under...
It's Star Group with... it's affiliated with Keith McNally, but it's owned by the Star Group.
They make all the so it's pretty much he's licensed.
It's a licensing
He's
deal,
licensed
it, like,
it
yeah.
to
and
the
design.
Star Group.
And design. He
I think he
the
was
design.
Part of the front of house design. He's definitely been present as a sort of figurehead. Mm. And I think he brings a lot of the old guard in as far as clientele.
And
but
he's
otherwise,
there every day,
well, let's
otherwise,
look at it this way.
Star restaurant.
What would be the legacy of Muhammad Ali if it wasn't actually Muhammad Ali?
Well,
like if at some point somebody stepped in and started boxing for him,
no, but
like
they say
what
actually,
would his legacy
what if
be?
Someone came out and did the James Brown show and it was
totally.
Identical to the James Brown show,
but
right?
it wasn't
it was,
James Brown.
But it was the band played great and it was exciting, you know, all those
Isn't
things.
That called
but
a
it
cover
wasn't
band?
James Brown. But what's really the difference?
Hey,
I mean, we're
I
talking
guess...
about what makes something an authentic experience versus not
sure.
an authentic experience. Like Emily, what if someone came to your house while you were like, you know, out for the weekend and replaced everything in your house with a completely identical object and you couldn't tell?
What's frightening?
What I know.
It's
kind of
weird.
But would it be different or would it be the same?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike, because you really don't. I mean, you would assume that there's some sort of stored energy in your things that from you collecting them that you would probably have a feeling something's creepy in your house. It'd probably be like one of those poltergeist films where you're just like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, there's something
but
wrong.
Something's fucking
something's
wrong
off.
In here.
I know.
I like this music analogy,
that's
though.
That's not Brandon, man. That's not, I know, that's not Brandon. What are you talking about? I don't know. That's not Brandon.
Yeah.
It
changed.
Looks and sounds like Brandon. It definitely smells like Brandon.
Yeah, but it's pod Brandon.
But this is a good question because the Doobie Brothers, right? They had a long career, right? And they were two separate bands.
Yes. Well, this is yes.
And they have a legacy, but that legacy or Van Halen. I mean,
well, I this is a good chance to plug my new book. It's not coming out until fall, but my book about Charlie Watts. It's called Sympathy for the Drummer,
right?
And why Charlie Watts matters, and it deals with the concept of replacing of what makes an object and what's replaceable and what's not. Do you know there were like 30 members of Black Sabbath over the years?
Right.
Okay. I mean, and the current version of bands like there are two versions of Yes on tour right now. The Coasters at one point had five versions.
What about Van Halen?
Wait,
touring
at the same time?
Yes. Right.
And, see, that doesn't sound
right.
Okay
right.
To me.
The version of like some of these legacy bands like Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears have no original members
right.
and claim to be the best lineups of all time.
Right. Right. Skinner. I mean, almost every single one of these legacy bands are out touring without
Cheap
the,
Trick has been touring
the,
without Bunny Carlos for a long time.
Ridiculous.
And you would think that he was essential to the
What's
band.
What's the new wave of the new,
I mean, at least by appearance, like that's
right.
what you associate.
Right. But they're still going out and putting on a great Cheap Trick show. I mean, the Ramones replaced Dee Dee and it was still quite a good Ramones show. But was it an authentic experience? I'm thinking yes. You know, I mean, obviously, Charlie Watts, Keith Richards, and Mick Jagger are not replaceable. They've changed the lead guitar slot or that second guitar slot a number of times. But then again, you know, the Rolling Stones are on tour now, and then they got like 11 people on stage. Only three of them are really Rolling Stones.
Right.
You know? That's one thing about the Beatles. They never switched, huh?
I mean, well, they fucking died.
Basically. And, but hey, listen, you know, when Keith Moon died, the Who tried to replace the drummer, and it was a disaster.
I mean, yeah,
it was
horrible.
It was a disaster.
Just because of the drummer?
Yeah, right? I mean, yeah, but Keith Moon was
just because of the drummer?
Yeah, he was the point of the...
Push buttons.
No, no, I know, but the drummer could bring the band down? What's it, like a Buddy Rich band?
No, he's a guy.
I mean, Keith, hey.
Charlie Watts is not replaceable. He is the heart and soul of that band. I mean, he swings that band, and it's his, you know,
well, you're writing a book with Charlie Watts.
And, no, I'm not writing it with him. I'm writing it about him. But it has to do with, again, like, you know, like the mere logical essentials of what makes a thing a thing. And Keith Moon was not replaceable.
John Bonham was the cultural centerpiece.
Not replaceable.
Yeah, which is why Zeppelin never went on after John Bonham.
Okay, so going back to restaurants, if you lose the chef.
There's also another
does
thing.
The restaurant
they're
restaurant.
Saying yes. They're saying yes.
Plenty of restaurants have replaced chefs. But also, I think Pastis lived in a very specific time,
sure.
In a place and time, and whatever culture was around it helped create the thing itself. And
like that,
and
Florent, that, remember?
And the
Florent?
Environment that created it may not exist anymore.
I think what we're trying to say Florent, is you remember? Can replace mm-hmm. specific yes. things.
But it will never be exactly the same.
Exactly, but it depends on like if it's an authentic change. Like if you're just, like, I don't know, Pastis, to me, like it was the embodiment of Keith McNally. It really was. It was one of his best creations artistically. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not even saying from a food standpoint, just the environment that it existed.
The oyster bar, it was the just curving a, it gold was, bar, it was the a tiles, tables, but, height of the chairs,
but
everything.
We know that the star group can manage a restaurant. Like, that's what they do. So, like, I don't know. If it feels like, if it's still authentically Pastis and it's run very well by Steven Star Group, I don't know. It may feel like Pastis.
There was never a great chef there. I mean, no offense to the chefs. There was never like a auteur chef.
I mean, hey, their thing wasn't...
No, but it was very much about the clientele.
I actually don't know who the chef was under Keith McNally.
They made a couple creative things, but they were enacting an old brasserie. They were not breaking new ground.
In fact, the Pete Wells review said that he thinks that the food is better now than it was at the old one.
Well, they buy Heritage.
Yes,
they didn't
in
the old days. No, they actually bought Heritage Turkey. Chef Pascal.
See, you remember the chef's name.
I know. I wonder where he is. He was southern France, like Ben Yule, kind of like.
Well, there's a really great energy. I mean, it's definitely a hot ticket right now. But, you know, like, look, the Four Seasons didn't change at all in terms of ownership. Actually, I think they lost their chef along the way. But
is
it just
shows. Is that
upsetting
you, Brandon? It upsets Anne, like, spending $25 million on a restaurant. Or do you think if you make money off of it, good for you? She's like, donate that to cancer. Don't spend $25 million with your group to open the Four Seasons. Or
that's slightly ridiculous to me. I have a hard time like just concepting what $25 million gets you in a place like that. You never walk into it and think, wow, this looks like a $25 million restaurant. Rarely.
But, I mean, people do. What was the guy? I mean, Lobster Club. I mean, I think that must have been where the old Four Seasons was. Also, they opened for these Four Seasons guys, these old guys. One of them, you know, was accused of something. Now they go $10 million. They're open for 6 months. God, what a waste.
Sounds like money laundering to me.
What a waste. You
know? I don't know. Well, and then do you do it for yourself as an owner? Are you doing it for the clientele? Did you lose your clientele somewhere along the way?
Can I tell you, Mario Carbone does it better. And Franchette does it better than what was there before. And Minetta, when Keith took that over, it improved. I think if it improves and moves, like the Four Seasons wasn't as good as what these guys are doing. Quality of the ingredients, outrageousness of it. But maybe 40 years ago, it was ahead of its time.
Again, you know, these things have to exist in an environment. And Manhattan, New York City has changed so much, it may not be able to exist again. The air has changed. The water has changed. Whatever it is. You know, the political climate has changed. The social life has changed. The, you know, the people walking around, the local economy has changed.
What about Elaine's, where it's like the force of the hosts, like Momo Sushi Shack?
Well, there was Michael's, too, was like the power lunch spot in Midtown.
Elaine's was its own thing. And obviously, it doesn't operate with Elaine. You know?
Exactly.
Any more the Rolling Stones operate without making Keith or Charlie. You know,
really put Charlie on that level. That's
of course. And by the way, so do they.
Yeah. Or they would have got rid of him years ago.
Well, it was great. Patrick and I walked into Pastis last week, and the original maitre d' from Pastis, the guy with the dreads, very elegant guy, was back.
The Times said it's the toughest reservation to get in the city right now. By the way, Anne would like a two-top with Liz, who left Gramercy Tavern for the new Gage and Tolner, the steakhouse that I wanted to open, which was never going to really open, but someone's actually running with it.
It was never going to really open.
No, I mean, it can't be told. It was also a steakhouse. When I heard the menu, too, he was going to cook just about everything there was on Earth. He was like, it's a steakhouse, breeds. But I'll have every single breed of fish.
Well,
and I'll have every single pork, like, breed. And
it would have been the most interesting place to
So Gage and Tolner is reopening. It's the owners of Insa and the Good Fork. So he Kim is opening, and it's on the Fulton Mall, which is the pedestrian only street in downtown Brooklyn.
Yeah, is the White Castle still there?
No.
No, but there used to be a White Castle.
That's why I haven't been there in a while.
But honestly, I think it's a very hard block to open on. I think you have to be able to have the money to sort of last those first few years to really like make it happen. I don't know. I think it's a very risky location, even though it's a wonderful old historical building and a great concept.
Do you think they have a vegetarian steak?
Impossible Burger is now advertising on Burger King.
This pisses me off. The vegetarian steak. You know, do what you want with your vegetables. I think it's great. I support vegetarian
diets. Like?
Have you guys seen that Arby's has produced a meat-based carrot?
That's so good.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, quit saying,
that should be your next Instagram.
It's tofu chicken. No, it's not chicken, you know? Someone said to me, we're making tuna salad out of hummus. I said, that's wonderful, but it's not tuna salad. It may have...
What's wrong with
it
hummus?
It may have some onions and celery and carrots in it. But
does it help the sale? Does it give you the mental association
Have some goddamn tuna. I don't get it. It's like a thing. Just calling a thing another thing doesn't make it that thing. You can call a pie a cake all day long. It doesn't make it so.
This is what we were talking about earlier. Can you just call it something and get the rights to it and then be it? No. Like, what? No one can ever reimitate Malamar unless it has real chocolate and real marshmallows.
I mean, there's a conversation, though, about rock and roll bands, especially, when you go to see Black Sabbath and there's no, there's no Ozzy. There's some guy I never heard of. You know, there's no bass player. The offstage keyboard player is now on stage. I mean, there's a couple of low points to that group.
That's a thing.
But you could tell by looking at it, no matter what their lawyers might tell you or the label might tell you, that wasn't Black Sabbath.
I'll take Tony and Dio, Ronnie James.
Okay, well,
I'll take that as a version.
See, that was an acceptable version for you, right?
I'll take that
as
a version. It wasn't my favorite version of Sabbath by any means, but I would have taken it.
But it had its own thing because it was Dio and it was like the heaven and hell
when
stuff.
When are you guys starting a band?
I know, you guys know a lot about often. Music.
This is our band.
Yeah.
I know, but I'd like a little,
Were you
going to
be spoken word or do you play an instrument?
He's talking to Brandon.
Me? Yeah, I do.
What? For those of you who can't see us.
I play just about everything.
Oh, really?
I
mean,
okay.
Cool. Do you sing?
I didn't know that.
I'm not a very good drummer. No, I'm a horrible singer. I mean, I can carry a tune, but I sound like a fucking idiot.
Are we going to hear anything, guys? Is there maybe...
Blue moon.
You're like Will Ferrell and stuff.
I really enjoyed that. I really want you to keep going.
Yeah.
We've talked about our...
that's right. You're a rapper.
The Dirty Water Dogs.
Yeah. Our Stoop Step Quartet.
Oh, my gosh. I really like
the world's first two-man quartet.
So sound like four.
We sound like a gang of marauders.
If you teach me what to do, I think I'm just as low as Mike right now. I'm a little extra raspy this week. So while
you would have sang? Is that what you're saying?
No. If you give me something low, I could... just sort of hum it or something. While you've been gone, Mike, all these scooters have popped up.
Oh, yeah, Revel.
Have you guys tried this?
Scooters have popped up?
They're everywhere.
It's like the city bike, but it's a little Vespa.
No.
You have to sign up for it. I think there's a helmet in the... in the back.
Which actually nobody ever wears. I'm watching these people drive around with their helmets on constantly.
Was that the thing maybe I saw last night
there's
whipping
two
around?
Parked
it's like
up,
a blue It's like a
there's
blue
There's two parked
scooter.
Up front of Roberta's
like
right now. Yes.
Yeah, it's like a,
they're mopeds.
A Vespa-y style scooter.
Yeah, what's the death count so far?
I don't know.
Right. The other annoying thing about it is that people, they have no parking etiquette. Like, if you live in New York for a long time, there's like you know, there's parking etiquette.
It's a social contract.
Whether or not you follow it or not. But like these things just get parked on the sidewalk. They get taken four spaces up. Like two people come and park it together and they take up the space that like a normal car could park in.
So upsetting. It's bad ridiculous. Parking kills the city.
Oh my God.
Bad driving kills the city. I mean, bad parking. They got two spots.
They park them out in front of Roberta's constantly, and we're constantly literally like just moving them. We have to pick them up.
What is one way? Like 200 pounds?
Yeah, I mean they're like
pieces of shit. Yeah,
they're pieces of shit.
Yeah. But it's amazing that thing's taken off. I see thousands.
But
and I'm with Mike here. Like, what's the death count? Like, let's start. Let's keep track here. I mean, yeah. It's gonna.
What about city bikes with no helmets? I mean, a lot of those tourists are going to get hurt.
Well, I mean, it's crazy the laws that we pass, but they can't get a law for... Is there a law for bike helmets? People do need
No.
It? There's no law? And how about lights? And lights are not about seeing. No. Lights are about being seen.
No.
I mean, how many times have you been nearly creamed by a delivery guy wearing black with no lights on his bike?
Well, no, you should say these delivery guys in New York, I don't know if it's around the rest of the world, but they have motorized bikes. So a bike, you see a bike down the block, but it's going 50 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and it comes right.
But
on
I don't
you.
See it as the problem because yeah. the guy's wearing black and he doesn't.
You're
have
talking about the ones that have the pedals, but I think the pedals only to get it started.
Right,
they don't actually.
No, it
pedal.
Goes 30, 40 miles an hour,
and you're going to make. I hate this. You're going to make a right turn. It's like I see this guy in my mirror, right, and I'm like. This guy's way the fuck back there. I got time to make this right turn. Next thing you know, you're turning. He's up on you.
And you get hit. Your dog gets hit. Your kid gets hit. They're on sidewalks. You come out of your building and some guy's going 30. It's amazing.
I mean, walking with your kids in New York City is petrifying these days.
When I was little,
I'm almost as scared of getting hit by some sort of motorized bicycle as I am by a car.
Absolutely.
I'm more nervous about the bike lanes. Far more nervous. Because
they go both ways. So you're looking one way and some other guy. And actually, I think the bike lanes are two-way. They don't
not on every avenue, but if you don't know which ones they are, like I think it's on Kent, it's both ways. It's frightening. Because you do what you're supposed to do. You look both ways, but you don't check back again.
Because I cannot wait for congestion pricing. It's an honor to drive in the city. If I want to drive, I should pay $25.
Oh my God, I think that the tolls on the tunnels should be like $4,000.
Yeah.
You know?
Park in New Jersey, take a ferry.
To bring an SUV with one passenger into Manhattan?
I mean, yeah.
It's terrible.
Do you think we need more gas stations then, if they do that?
More gas stations.
So many people have to leave. There's seven gas stations left in Manhattan.
More places to charge your electric car.
No,
I don't
no
know, but I think Manhattan should be largely a pedestrian zone.
I mean, taxis
and commercial traffic.
I think the lack of gas stations keeps the congestion down. Yes. I think they should go down to two gas stations. Let there be a fucking line all day.
Have you ever driven down?
Then that takes the cabs off the street for at least like 40 minutes.
Down Park Avenue, you can drive 30 miles an hour, and then you at Union Square, you kind of have to jut, and it becomes Broadway. I mean, you're too. Feet off, you're killing 100 people on that block.
Yeah,
it shouldn't exist.
I feel like that exists in like Columbus Circle too. There's like this like turn that's like where you're just like
that word jog right, jog left.
Yeah, like, totally.
I could kill 80 people, and it would have been a minor mess up on my part, but because of how dense certain roads are, absolutely $20, $30, $50.
Well, I read that 14th Street crossed the. They were going to close it for pedestrians and buses, but I think that's stalled again.
Well, because of the L train, they were going to make all these changes. The L train going down.
Right.
Now that it's not going down, I think maybe they might not make all those changes.
I don't know, unless it's going
down. They made Times Square a pedestrian zone, right, largely?
Yeah.
So this is our last show before summer break.
Yes, there's summer break here at HRN for the next 2 weeks, and we'll be back September 5th.
Anyone doing anything fun?
That was gonna be my question.
Well, I just jumped you.
I know.
I love stepping all over your questions.
We're going to Missouri next week.
Ooh, that sounds exciting.
Oh yeah, really? Hot dog.
You want to come along?
You guys hitting the riverboat? You doing some riverboat gambling?
Yes, that's the place we're going.
We are. We're going to visit Newman Farm right on the Missouri-Arkansas border next week.
And then the Mennonites who are raising our turkeys. Guys I've never met before, but they're raising half our turkeys. I've seen videos and stuff, but this is the first time going to visit them. They're raising like 5,000 turkeys.
All right, well, whatever blows your skirt up, Patrick. That's cool.
A little Narragansett.
Nothing like going to Missouri in the late August heat.
Sounds fun.
I'm good. I'm going in September. I'm picking it up. We're going to Katie Kiefer's house, which won in the silent auction, the Heritage Radio fundraiser last year.
Wow.
So we got her house for the weekend, and it's just a matter of finding a date.
Which is in like New England, some Connecticut.
It's in Rhode Island, right
Rhode
near the
Island,
ocean.
That's right.
A lot
Rhode
of clam
Island.
Shacks there.
Yeah, Rhode Island.
It should still be warm enough for swimming, but
I imagine it's a beautiful house.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
I'll write you a book, How to Cope with Lyme Disease. It's a good book to have.
Key Lyme disease.
When you get back there.
Hey, there's no laughing matter.
Everybody gets Lyme disease there. When my little dog comes back for a 1 minute pee at Katie's house, I mean, it's a lovely house. He's covered in ticks.
I mean, hey, I'll tell you, this year has probably been one of the worst years for ticks that I've seen.
Yeah,
but
you go
like in Suffolk County, you just get out into Eastern Long Island and it's everywhere. You're covered. I mean, Montauk's unbearable.
Yeah.
Twice. This is my. I got it twice. Well, I got it once this year, but I got
it. So, were you just super tired? Fever?
No,
amongst other things, yes, super tired is one of the symptoms, but I had 105 fever. Your body aches like pretty much like you have an extreme case of arthritis through your whole body. Hmm. It's like you could barely move.
Your
I mean, it's a horrible, it's a horrible disease. My oldest had a tick and we treated it right. Like we pretty much put her on antibiotics right away. I'm a hairy ass MF, so I probably just didn't see it. I must have got it right around the same time as her, but I didn't see it, and, you know, I got sick.
So you will be watching closely for ticks for the last few weeks
of
summer?
I do. We always do. Well, I mean, we're pretty thorough tick checks almost every time you come in the house, but, you know, they
some get by.
They get you.
They're just little ticks.
So
they're
we're
teeny.
Going to Missouri and week then after I have a wedding in Massachusetts.
Oh.
A little
not Costa Rica or the Dominican Republic this time.
Oh yeah,
the mundane Massachusetts.
Mike's
you know,
like,
I'm really looking
Mike hates
forward
when people
to
are like, "Yeah, I just want to share with family and friends. Come to my wedding in Argentina."
That was in Cartagena. Yeah. Yes, when I was
in
out
Cartagena.
In March.
Yeah. Yeah, Patrick
like,
can't
I'll
even spell Cartagena.
$4,000.
And then you guys
dollars.
Discussed on air that I ended up getting a stomach bug while I was there.
I don't know. Did we?
Don't eat the fish at the ocean cruise buffet.
Basically, I'm not allowed to go away ever because, you know, it will
you're
just be
important.
Ammunition for Patrick.
Now you can go wherever you
I also agree with this, like having your wedding like really far away. I mean, you're pretty much just saying you only want the people who could afford to go to your wedding.
$5,000.
Which is kind of like what Donald Trump is doing with America.
It is a way to call the herd. Yeah.
I appreciate the ones that are like driving distance or there is some form of public transportation available. The ones where you basically are obligated to have a car or like rent a car for a weekend and drive like 7 hours up to Maine. Like that's
I just think that, you know, when you have a party or a mitzvah, a wedding, which yes. wedding is, you should bear the expense and it shouldn't be projected onto your guests at all. Otherwise, it's
in a perfect world,
at,
me,
at all.
Wait.
You,
like,
bring,
at
you
all.
Make
like,
me
at,
bring
like,
my own
like,
potatoes
like,
to a latke party.
I mean, if you're going to drive across town or, you know,
in a
reasonable,
perfect world,
okay,
I agree with you 100%. I think the if you have the money,
you should
even pay for everyone to stay and to get there.
Of course you should, because otherwise it's not a party. It's like you're saying, come worship, you know, the altar of you know, our wedding. It's like we're more important than you are.
Making people wear black tie. I'm like, fuck yeah, man, who the hell are you? I'm not wearing a black
well,
tie
the
for your
how about
ass.
The culture of
I don't own a black tie.
Yeah.
No.
Not even a dark blue
at
one.
That point it's
oh,
a,
right.
At that point, it's
but
a costume
some
drama.
Do
no, but I was
going
to say that he's trying to make nice.
No,
my
I forgot
was
that you
tie.
Had that. Yes. No, I'm just like, I
but
just,
I was
going to
say, the
I'm
culture of bridesmaids and groomsmen, it's a very like costly
the
thing.
The military
when you're
industrial
people,
wedding complex?
You have to buy
yes.
this particular dress. You have to wear this color shoes. You have to do this, that, and the other
I
thing.
I have to be honest with you. I have not gone to almost all of my friends' weddings, and I probably wouldn't even have gone to Patrick's wedding except for I had sold him something. So I was there to make sure that a solid bill of goods, right? Like what I sold him was to be completed.
Yeah, no, it was
but,
the food.
But I have no problem just not going to weddings. It's
where was your wedding?
In the backyard of Roberta's.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right.
So you just
that
like,
about right.
left work and went to your wedding?
Kind of, yes.
Then didn't you? Was that you're the wedding where the in-laws got into a fight up at the altar? No, that was not yours. That was a different Roberta's
that
wedding.
Would have been hilarious.
Because her dad is from Long Island and your dad's from Napa. Your dad could take him.
I mean, they're her also dad's old. Also, my parents are just the extremely white version of her parents. Lydia and Boris are my wife's parents, and my parents are Linda and Bill.
Wow.
The white version, the extremely washed out version.
The Anglo version.
The Anglo version of the authentic immigration story.
All right. Well,
Patrick, how about you? You're going to the Yankee game this weekend?
Yeah, I got the TD Bank tickets. Second row.
Corporate in front, sports still
first
suck.
First row is Lorne Michaels, and he has like three seats. And he never, ever looks back at Giuliani. I've seen him twice at those tickets, and Giuliani's like, hey, because the other actors are there, like Jimmy Fallon, because he has four tickets. And he will not look. It's literally like this. It's uncomfortable. And Giuliani gets booed sometimes when he's walking to his
seat. Of course he should. He's a lunatic, fascist, racist, you know what my, nutcase.
No, the Republicans, tell us how you really feel. This about the Republicans. I am sick of their bitching. I think Joe Biden's thing should be a man. If a Mexican guy takes your job and that's so upsetting to you, don't admit it.
What if you're a woman? What do you do?
What's that?
What if you're a woman? What do you do?
What do you mean?
Still it's hard to be a man.
But isn't that like a
Alice Cooper song or
a
Bob Dylan song or something? It's hard to be a man if you're a woman. Something. One of those.
How many times are they bitching?
Sounds like Dr. Hook to me.
No one hates America more than the Republicans. They bitch so much that they're getting fucked up the butt. I'm like, stop. Stop. Just be a man. Go to your kid and say that you got a job, not that you lost it and can't get it back. That's a terrible way to live. How do you even have the energy to go to McDonald's?
Wow.
They're constantly
what a
bitching.
Way to round up
wow.
the show.
Wow. A little bit of white privilege.
How
all right.
How much whining is there by that party? It's sickening. And they hate America. And then they accuse our little squad of four women who are on our most left of being representative of the party. Nancy Pelosi would never let that stuff happen. And what about their four most extreme on the right? Those must be terrible people. Anyway, the bitching, I can't deal with it. And I hate that TV's been robbed of me. I can't watch the local news, the national news anymore, because it's all about their bitching. I mean, it's very upsetting. Be a man, be a woman.
I like this, though.
Or don't be a man or a woman. Maybe you haven't been paying attention, but there are other options.
Yeah, there are.
Be any of the 17 established sexes, but be man. Be an adult. Stop saying that you got screwed.
Be strong.
Yeah, be strong. Yeah.
That's it. Be strong.
Be strong.
That's right. These colors don't run.
Speaking of being strong, did anyone see that Andrew Cuomo had beat somebody up at a beach on Shelter Island, I believe it was?
Good.
What happened?
Andrew, I don't know. We probably should. What's that?
His brother or the governor?
We should look this up. Chris, the guy on CNN.
Oh, it's Chris. Makes more sense because
Someone was baiting him, I think.
Yeah?
I think that story is kind of a non-starter.
Cuomo's are strong. Both of those guys are big, strong guys.
Yeah, Chris Cuomo's like at the gym quite often, I think. Yeah.
Mario Cuomo, the old man, huge into basketball.
I bet.
Yeah, it goes Catholic guys like St. John's. Like, there's a lot of support of basketball in the inner cities with those Catholic priests.
I'm not a big fan of the governor, but he did sign the first bill in the country that bans declawing of cats.
Really?
Yep. So, like, beside all this other bullshit, on Albany, the most corrupt place on earth, that was good.
But you still can cut their feet off, right? Yeah. Like, you could just take their whole foot off.
You can do whatever else
you want. Above the joint.
Above the joint.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, this says, CNN says it completely supports anchor Chris Cuomo after he was seen on video threatening to push a man down some stairs during a confrontation after the man apparently called him Fredo in a seeming reference to the Godfather movies. The video appeared Monday on a conservative YouTube channel. I don't know. It doesn't show the Fredo reference, but depicts Cuomo's profanity-laced reaction as he characterizes the comment as an anti-Italian slur. The man says he thought Fredo was Cuomo's name.
I would love to see Chris and Andrew as a tag team in like some sort of wrestling format, whether
against
it be Mexican or Japanese. Probably not the WWF because that may be too just crazy, or WWE as it is. But there should be more wrestling in politics. Right. Whoa! Speaking of strong,
Mike
just led into the summer.
Like the Hulk just ripped his microphone off the stand, but that was amazing.
All right, everyone.
Of this man.
I think it means it's time for the summer break. So
to wrap up. Great job. This has been a great show.
Mike, we love having you back
you guys
in the
are
studio.
Great.
That's good. That's the sound of your ratings spiking.
Why? Because you and Brandon are here?
Always, for sure.
I mean, we are the voice of unreason.
You heard it here. The voice of unreason and the voice of the main course OG. Thanks, everyone. We will be back.
I think this microphone injured me. I'm going to be...
enjoy late August, and we'll be back in a couple weeks. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.